Welcome today to GenUX, and we are talking to someone I'm super excited to talk to. This is Damon Mitchell. He is a life coach, and we're going to talk to him about a couple of different things that he's seeing in his industry and how he uses intrinsic data too. So before further ado, Damon, welcome. Introduce yourself. Tell everybody about yourself.
Thank you for that, and I appreciate being here. Thank you for inviting me to do this. I'm excited.
Me too.
Yeah. So, what's interesting about my life? I mean, I think most people first and foremost find it interesting that I live abroad. My wife and I live in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. And that's always a conversation starter or stopper, depending. But you mentioned I'm a life coach. I work with men. As I say it, the distinction for me is I'm not a men's coach. I'm a coach for men. And we can talk about, why I make that distinction. But I also keep an active lifestyle. So, I'm exercising 6 days a week, have been for most of my adult life.
That's awesome. So is there anything else, any other fun facts that you want to share with us about, like living in Mexico and the decisions as to why you made the move from the United States to Mexico? Any fun things that you want to share with the audience?
Well, this is going to complicate things because I didn't make the decision to move from the United States to Mexico. We made the decision to move from Costa Rica to
Mexico.
Oh, that's
right. That's right. Yes, I forgot that part.
Yes.
So you went from Los Angeles, Costa Rica to the best place ever. But, I was going to say Cabo, but you're not in Cabo. You're in Playa del Carmen, which is beautiful. I was out there and met you guys out there. So it was such a fun trip to see you. So tell me about
Agreed. Yeah. We moved. I think, for a lot of expats, they leave because they're running from something. They have a problem with the government or the people or the taxes. And we just wanted to push ourselves. We wanted to do something different. We wanted to feel, I think, kind of liberated. We were both pretty married to our jobs in the States, work hard, play hard. And Costa Rica offered us an escape from that. But we didn't find the right zhuzh in Costa Rica. We found it in Mexico. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I also want to point out that in Costa Rica, you guys actually had a pizza parlor, which I think is really awesome because who doesn't love pizza, right? So you had a whole different world there, and then you've kind of reinvented yourself in where you are now, and you're doing something completely different, which I think is really awesome. Like, people don't realize that you can just make these choices and do these things, and I think it makes you a stronger human being.
So, thanks. I agree. I mean, I think it's important to point out these are tough choices and require sacrifice. Most people who make these choices end up tucking tail and going home, which is also fine. I think it's still worth the effort. These people don't go home empty-handed. They learn something about themselves. But this certainly is not where we thought we were going to end up. This work is not what I imagined myself doing. We were going to open a bar on the beach. That was a big thing. Yeah. Well, at the time, that was my number one activity. So.
Yeah. It's a great activity to have. I love that hobby. But they're from Costa Rica, pizza place, opening a bar on a beach. How did you end up in the space that you are now as working with as a coach and working with people, making them healthier, happier, and working in their relationships and on themselves? Yeah. How did you end up in this space?
Yeah. So it is kind of a funny story. After when we arrived in Costa Rica, I spent about the first 7 months drinking and decided that probably wasn't going to work. In my prior life, my work habit balanced out my drinking habit, and absent a career, there was just a lot of time to drink. So I stopped and I started writing, and I got picked up by a local marketing agency to write content, blogs, site content, and stuck with that for a while. I eventually became a copywriter, did email strategy and copywriting, sort of found myself down this path that seemed like it would fit my talents, but it did not fit my sense of purpose. And so a few years ago, I did what's called purpose discovery work and came up with a purpose statement that made no sense to what I was doing. It was to connect deeply with individuals so that we could solve problems together. And I'm like, what does that mean? It's right, but it's not the right thing. So I talked to a friend. I talked to many people. I talked to a friend who's a therapist. And I said, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to become a therapist. I don't want to study. He's like, well, why don't you be a life coach? And I was like, I'm not going to be one of those. And it's just, that sounds like a terrible job. And I researched it and found out my perception of what it was and what it actually is. We're not aligned. And then I was like, wow, this is actually the right fit. I still don't like the title life coach, which is why I generally drop the life. I just call myself a coach. But that is how I became this thing that I am now that I call coaching.
Let's talk about that cognitive dissonance for a second, because I feel like a lot of people, and maybe this comes up in what you do, like, but you were like, no, I'm not going to do that thing. That doesn't sound like something for me. And then, like you said, you looked into it and you had your purpose statement. How did all that gel together for you?
Yeah.
Like, because it was like, no, definitely not. Right. And now it's like, this is my world. This is my jam.
Coaching has a branding problem. This is the copywriter in me. Because the assumption about what coaching is, life coaching is that you think of the models you have for coaching. You think of like athletic coaches. And in most cases, when people talk about coaching, what most people assume coaching is a kind of net expertise on subject matter, like, you know, American football or something like that. And so what we think of as a coach is that model, like, you know the plays, you know how to excel, you kind of get your arm around people's neck and you're like, come on and get them. You're a bit of a cheerleader. And when you put that word with the word life, it sounds like, well, I'm an expert on life and just come talk to me and I'm going to tell you how life works. And I was like, I'm not interested. And what I found in researching it is I go to the International Coaching Federation School of Thinking, which not really a school, but they essentially say that that is not what coaching is. Coaching is not advising. It is not expertise. It is more level with the clients. It is about asking the appropriate open-ended questions that get the clients to self-discover what's actually true for them in a moment and what they actually want to make happen, which sounds simple, but actually knowing what we want to make happen is complicated because we are not simple internally. We have conflicting wants and we get stuck between wants, not knowing which is more important or which serves our total desired purposes better. That's the kind of coaching that I'm doing. And that made sense to me. The other kind that I imagined where I was like the expert on life was never going to fit. So it was just a misperception of what it is, because in my opinion, it's just bad copywriting.
Fair enough. So you touched on a point where you were talking about the school of thought on coaching and the thing that you go back to. So I think I'm going to call it true coaching for lack of a better descriptor.
Yep.
And you kind of said, well, I guess I want to paraphrase it and say, you're trying to lead a horse to water, like, but you can't make a horse drink. You can only just try to get them to where they need to go because, you know, they're thirsty.
Sure.
So when we talk about the type of coaching that you do, how do you apply this in your practice and with the people that come to you, and how do you like gravitate towards this true space that you've created? It doesn't have to be true for other people, but true for your practice specifically.
So how, I think how the majority of the coaches, at least that I meet out there, work with, well, this is kind of the challenge with coaching. And this is why it's tough to say I'm a life coach or I'm a coach, because it's a varied practice. It's a little bit like maybe chiropractor work or physical therapy, where you go to one professional and they have the same, you know, sign above their door, but you go to somebody else who's claiming to do the same job and it's done wildly differently. Coaching is very much like that right now. I think the majority of coaches do tend to be more what I would say is directive in the way that they coach. So they are working in a kind of paradigm where they know the answers, they have advice, they give advice to tell you what they think, you know, they'll listen to you, hear what you have to do. And that's not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is a kind of like non-directive style of coaching, which is we start our dialogue by figuring out what it is we're talking about. And then we determine what ideally we'd get to through the course of the conversations. So that's what we call the agreement. And then we have an exploration of what is coming up for that person until something reveals itself as the part that matters most. It's a little bit goofy to explain. It's definitely something that's more easily understood through experience, which is generally when I work with people, what I don't do is I don't try to walk them through this how. It's just they're like, okay, I don't know. It's more like, let's just work together for a couple of times and you'll either get a sense of it and it'll work for you or it won't work for you.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. So segueing into like how you use your process.
Yeah.
Segueing into like how you use your process. So Let's talk about things that like you've noticed in your industry, specifically within your own practice.
Yeah.
For example, are there any trends that you're noticing? One of your Substacks that I read was about masculinity is a complete package, and it really resonated with me. And I'm wondering about this topic. Was something happening behind the scenes that brought up this topic in brought this topic into your foreground, in trends in your
Yeah.
space, like that kind of stuff, because that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah. So we can do that. I should flag up front, I never wanted to be a coach for men. That wasn't like where I thought I would end up. I sort of fell into this category. Most of my clients were men, and I'm seeing these themes and I'm getting animated by these conversations. And so eventually you kind of lean into what has chosen you, I think, in this work. But yeah, I went to the so I have a men's group that I work with, and I also have a wide network of men that I work with, both in professional but also just, casual. I just see them as like my wise circle of friends, right? And I went to this group, this entirety of group, this mix, and said, I asked this question. I said, in a world where masculinity seems to be on the chopping block, what's worth keeping? And the answers were not at all what I expected. The general, if I could generalize our answers, and that's really hard to do, it was kind of a just a I don't like the question was really what I was hearing from the men. They one guy outright did not even want to talk about it. He felt like it was kind of an offensive topic. Masculinity was something that was just forbidden to discuss. That was the extreme. Most of the guys were like, I don't resonate with this. I don't know what this means. I don't even know what you mean by that word. And it doesn't motivate me to get involved to try to figure it out. It was all polite conversation, but the sense I got to finally answer your question was, at least with the men that are gravitating towards me, they're not finding a sense of wholeness or value through talking about masculinity.
Really interesting. So you're seeing that percolate, shall we say? Do you think it's because of cultural situations that we're in right now? Like maybe there's a, I'm going to call it an alpha and a beta situation, like
Sure.
just for because I think people know words like alpha and beta
Yeah.
types of personalities, whether it's male or female, it's kind of a neutral term. Do you think
Sure.
that there's like just more of a rise of people who are trying to just be somewhere where they, when they want to assert themselves, they do, and when they don't, they just kind of, are a little more even keeled and find that to be like maybe more beta versus using the word alpha? Maybe it's a bad word. Maybe masculinity is a bad word in our culture right now. Like, what is your pulse on that?
Yeah. So my this I feel comfortable with saying that these words are just not resonating with the lion's share of men, or at least the men that I'm working with. And I'm also reaching out through, I have a Substack, and so I'm connecting with an audience there, and I'm getting the same impression from that and the comments and the conversations that are coming out of it. What's actually going on, I can hypothesize, and I think it has, to me it seemed, and this is pulling in my experience as an expat, as a United States citizen, looking back on my country and what I'm seeing, and I know people across the states with all types of political affiliations, is I don't think it's stating anything novel to say that there's a polarization going on in the United States. And that polarization is, from at least from this perspective, largely a story that's being told. It's not actually what's in people's homes. There are very loud factions that are sort of making the news and making social media, and I think the majority of people actually aren't on those extremes. They're somewhere between that, and they feel like they're kind of like, I don't want to be associated with this polar thing where it's like, you look, you got to get all the way on this side, or you got to get all the way on that side. The people who are in the middle are like, leave me out of it. Leave me out of it. I just want to pay my taxes, park my car in a safe spot, have a home. Like, they just want these nice things. The topic of masculinity comes up as a kind of opposite to femininity. Like, there are two loud voices in men's work right now. One is saying, hey, men just need to start acting more masculine. And there's another voice that's saying, men just need to act more feminine. I literally read the other day that the men's movement is actually just repackaged feminism. And I thought, that may be true, but I think most men that read that are going to be like, ugh, I can't connect with that. Even if they maybe even call themselves a feminist and think of themselves in that way, they're going to be like, no, that's not resonant for me. Again, I'm speaking from the men that I'm having contact
That's okay.
with, and the sense that I get from the conversations that I'm having. I'm sure there's probably a split where 10% of the male population is like, yes, we need to be more like women. And 10% is like, yes, we got to be more like men. And then the other 80% is in the middle going, I don't know. Something else matters to me.
Yeah. And like, I've seen this come up in a couple of psychology like conversations, and the idea of pair bonding, because maybe women are really interested in like what I'm going to call a beta male, like, or just someone who's not as like, I think that there's an identity of masculinity being like an aggressive situation. These things don't bother someone like me. I have an aggressive male in my life. I would call him probably an alpha male. And I, like, he tells me to shut up and I'm good with that. Like we're good. We're fine. Cause if someone didn't, I'd probably just like walk all over them, and that's an okay thing. Like, we're a good balance for one another. And like, I'm totally fine with him, and he can fix everything in my house and I don't have to call somebody to do it. And like, you know, like those things are, he grew up on a farm. He had to be a MacGyver. Like, that's just the way he is. And I do think my husband is quite masculine. Sure. And, all those things. And I think he's kind of more of an alpha male too. And that's an okay thing for me. Like, it works. But I wonder if the beta males are, or people who are identifying as beta males, whether or not they think they're more masculine or not, doing that, maybe because it's like a pair bonding thing where they're finding themselves in their earlier, you know, ages, and women are more interested in someone who might be a little bit more neutral, or just perceived as more neutral, as a better pair match for them for procreation and life partnerships. I don't know if you're having any of those conversations, but I have seen those come up. Like, what is your take on that?
That's an interesting question. I just want to pause and dial back just a second. I just want to tell you how obvious it was that you love your husband as you were describing him. Like, you cannot hide it on your face how much you adore him. And I noticed that. And that's great. I think what you're speaking to is this idea that in any circumstance, someone has to take a lead position. Someone has to be a kind of decision maker. And I know this might ruffle some feathers because this isn't really popular, especially amongst younger adults. There's a kind of movement towards groupthink and, you know, making group decisions. And I think that tends to be problematic. I saw this in business. I worked in fitness for 10 years. We took our leadership from a central general manager position who had department heads below that role, and actually created three department heads who co-ran the clubs for a period of time. And the problem is that nobody was ultimately on the hook for decisions that were being made. New leadership came in, noticed this, reorganized the company. Like, no, you can't, because everybody's pointing fingers. When something goes wrong, it's like, well, it's operations, it's fitness, it's sales. So there had to be a final word. Somebody at the club who's like, look, whether this is the right call or the wrong call, I'm going to own it. If it goes badly, I'm going to be in trouble. If it goes great, we're going to celebrate how you guys did this, and you're an awesome team. And suddenly the company had structure and it had a shape. I think this is just generally true about humans, and I don't pretend to know why. In a relationship dynamic, I don't think it necessarily matters which particular gender is taking the role of lead, but that there's somebody at the end of the day that is like, look, I don't know, you know, what do you think we should do in this situation? We take a left or we take a right? How do we get to the place? What meal do we make for the people coming over? Like, house made out of wood or house made out of concrete? In your situation, you ultimately prefer that somebody else be the final word in how things go. And that tends to be true in our house. It's not because I'm like a control freak. People would say I'm an A-type personality, and maybe somebody would say I'm an alpha. I don't know, but I've just fallen into leadership roles more in my life than my wife has. And so I tend to be the one who's like, look, I'll just own whether this goes right or wrong. That's not 100%. Even in our household, there are times when I'm like, I can't. Today, I can't. I don't have it in me. You make a choice. Yeah. And you own it. And that's what I love about my wife, is that she can step in and be like, all right, I'll make a choice. And, you know, we just deal with the consequences. I think that's more of what's true about this. I don't know how much this has anything to do with historic gender roles. You could look at like non-standard relationships, like gay relationships, as an indicator of this. Like, what happens when two women are in a marriage, and then, okay, now who's supposed to, what that's completely upsets this whole question
idea
of what's,
of a,
you know.
that kind of a Norman Rockwell family home. Yeah, it's not the same.
Right.
But I do.
Yeah.
I think if you're onto something here, though, like I do think that when you are in a relationship, anyways, a healthy one,
Yeah.
you and your partner, if you're paired well, and you are best friends, because I mean, there are certain things I look for. It sounds like you and your wife, who I also know,
Yes.
have a very similar type of relationship. Like you guys, to me, seem to be like partners in life and best friends. Where my husband also. Like, if no one else was around, he's my bestie. Like, we hang out, we do a whole bunch of stuff together. We like a lot of the same things, and we do make those choices, and we
Yeah.
do divide and conquer in our own ways. And yeah, you're right. Somebody has to take lead on, oh, we're having people over for dinner. What is the menu? Oh, we talk about it. If he wants, like, he really likes grilling, so he likes to choose what we're grilling and that kind of thing. But I do
Nice.
all the rest of it, right? Like, I'm like, I'm going to make cherry pie and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Yes, I make cherry pie from scratch and you're welcome. And no, you can't have any because I'm not cherry. But I mean, if you came over, I'd make you cherry pie if you wanted one.
Fair.
But
I didn't
like
know if that
the
was
point is,
directed at me or just you in
no,
general.
just a general like
I
audience thing. I'm like, you're
was
not getting any of my cherry pie. You're welcome. So like I do think that there is something to be said about partners and partnerships and what that
Sure.
looks like. And I think our generation, I don't know, a lot of my friends never even got divorced. You know,
Yeah.
like they saw their parents get divorced, and I think that they made different choices, but that's kind of off topic. So I think like when it comes to partnering and pair bonding, like
Yeah.
back to the point where we're talking about like the differentiation of like, I don't want to say the word masculine. I want to be a little more neutral when I talk about this thing in my
Yeah.
name as a man or even as a woman. Like women can be masculine too. What that even looks like. And it's interesting. Like these are interesting topics. Like I also think I was going to ask you about like, because you're of my age. And so in the
Yeah.
90s, we started to see this idea of a metro guy, like
Yeah.
not super, super like rugged. And it started to be the change of like guys kind of like dressing a little
Yeah.
sexier. Let's just put it that way. Like it wasn't just like the jeans and the t-shirt or the Carhartt kind of rugged wear. Like guys started to like
Get
appreciate
fashionable. Yeah.
fashionable things. Like they got their nice haircuts. Like there was a shift, I think, in the 90s about those type of men. There were even songs that were written about them. Like
Yeah.
there's like I think a song called Glamour Boy by Fishbone. It wasn't Fishbone, it was some other band, but it was like basically talking about how like there was this whole grunge movement and then there was this like they called preppy, like polished movement, and like there was this juxtaposition of that. And so I wonder if the things that you're seeing have come from that, and now this younger generation, or like, well, I don't know if you're coaching people about your age or and younger, but I'm assuming it's
Mostly,
kind of a mix. Mostly people. Okay.
mostly Gen Xers, a few, it's a little bit millennial, mostly 35 and up.
Okay, so
Yeah.
that's a good age mix of like things that people that have seen these things transpire in our
Yeah.
communities and like, you know, change in our environment. So do you think that any of those things when they started to happen are playing into their identities now?
Yeah, you brought up a couple of really interesting points, and one that actually you wanted to set aside, which is the divorce issue. I want to come back to that, but on the matter of like the metro male and the fashion, I'm gonna take a note from a friend of mine who does actually he does style coaching for men, Shlomo, yeah, Shlomo Homnick. He's a fun guy to look up, and he actually got into this debate recently with somebody who made that argument that this is this new thing, and actually his point is, really, only the last 100 years have men been so fashionless. The t-shirt and jeans, kind of just, you know, whatever look. The long history of men actually were the more fashionable, more fashion conscious, more highly decorated, makeuped. You don't have to go back too far in history, yeah, to find men wearing more makeup than women. And there's a whole conversation we can have about why that is, but this sort of grungy man thing is actually fairly new to humans. So it's an interesting point to make up, and there's a, probably an entire podcast to be had about
We'll
why that
have
comes
that.
to
Yeah,
pass.
definitely. Definitely.
But I want to grab the piece about divorce, which you said maybe isn't relevant, and I think actually in many ways it is. I'm also a child of divorced parents. I think a lot of Gen Xers are children of divorced parents. This is common amongst the clients that I work with. My mother was very young when she met my dad, and she had a child. She had my older brother already. He took her under his wing and provided for her. And as she aged, she matured, and she came into an age of, wanting her own things and being a more of a grown up in many ways. And that was really hard for my dad. No disrespect to either of them, but he was in many ways, I think, just looking at it from my perspective, losing his position as the confident traditional man in the relationship. And that challenged their relationship in ways that ultimately broke it apart. I think that was pretty common during the 80s and the 90s.
Women have been, statement. Yeah.
Right. And it's a reflection of women, have been on the issue of how they're supposed to be since the suffragettes, which is like 19th century history. This has been going on for well over 100 years, where women have been saying, wait a minute. We want the rights to do the things that we want to do. We want to own companies. We want to be able to vote. We want to have credit cards. When my mother was an adult, she was not allowed to have a credit card unless it was under her husband's name. That has changed in her lifetime. And men have not been questioning their role in as long of a period of time. Women started questioning it in the 19th century. Men were worried about who they were showing up as back then. This is all very new to men. And so it's relevant in that sense, where the idea, if you and I were having this conversation even a decade ago, but certainly two decades ago, we would both be very clear on what the definition of masculinity is. And I think a larger percentage of men would be like, yeah, that's me. I'm that guy, So what I'm saying is,
Don Draper from Mad Men, any of the guys that he worked with,
or Grizzly Adams. Do you remember Grizzly Adams? Yeah. I mean, this was another kind of more rugged kind of man. I mean, when I was a kid, I told my mom I want to be Grizzly Adams, and I wanted a bear. I wanted a bear, and I wanted to live in the forest. Things have changed, but the point being is that this conversation is very new to men. We're super unfamiliar with this water. Women are very familiar with it. Most women, all women today, grew up in a world where this was already in the water. They were already having these conversations about, well, I'm told I'm supposed to be this way, but I want to be a different way. And so some of what I'm running into is men going, I don't know. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. Do you tell me how to feel about this? Tell me the right way to feel. I don't even want to talk about this. This is weird and gross, and I don't like it.
So maybe they're like kind of displaced in this conversation because they're trying to find where they stand in, because the traditional, maybe the traditional roles that maybe they're looking for aren't available. Like that could be a real thing. I do think that
it is. So, and there are a lot of people talking about this. Scott Galloway talks about this a lot. He lands more on the traditional side, but he also massages in elements of, it is not only a good idea for men to let themselves be vulnerable. It's important for them to in the appropriate context, in the appropriate space, but they also want to feel like they're providers. I don't agree with everything Galloway says, but he's having the conversation at least.
So let's talk about providers and the concept of masculinity in like a 1950s frame versus what that looks like now.
Okay.
Because in the 1950s, I mean, my grandfather was the breadwinner. My grandmother worked for charities. That was kind of, and took care of the kids. And there's nothing, I 100% think there's nothing wrong with that family dynamic. I think it's wonderful if a woman or a man could stay home and take care of their family. Technically, it's still the woman. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, if that was our life, that's what I would do. And I would make that my choice, and I'd be happy with it. That's not what we do, because A, we don't have kids, and B, we're like one of those couples that doesn't have kids and does whatever we want whenever we want to, and we literally do it.
Same.
And and you guys are too. But let's kind of dive a little bit into that, like, because women like myself, I have a business, your wife has a business, you have a business. It's a very different landscape. As a matter of fact, I only know a handful of women that have stayed home and not been in the workforce. Not very many. Most of the women that I know all have careers in some capacity or another. And even what I'm also finding interesting is that the women that I know who do have young children, they still work part-time because they're like, I need grown-up talk. Like, I need that. And their husbands are like, doing the little more traditional role here. But do you think men are struggling with that concept? Like, are they trying not to step on someone's toes? Are they trying to just like find their space in the world? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think I think it's exactly that. There's a kind of, in fact, I'm blanking on the author's name just because I have ADD, but there's a book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm still hoping that name's going to come to me, and I'm so sorry.
I don't remember what it doesn't matter. like
It does
tomorrow.
really matter because he's very influential in this space. But the idea is that, you know, he's speaking to this idea amongst a lot of men, especially my age, where we were raised in an environment where, you know, we were told that who we are and how we show up is bad or wrong. And so these men have tried to be a nice guy, you know, and be accommodating. And they're also figuring out that that isn't working. And it's not about being a mean guy, but it's about being a whole human being who knows what they want, and they ask for it like a grown up with respect to other people's dignity. My sense of it is men are, and I don't mean to repeat myself here, but men are trying to chew on something that they haven't previously been chewing on. Women are more comfortable. To your point, you know, the women that you know have businesses. It's funny because you cite that you like to have an alpha male as your partner. You like that part. Yeah. And yet if you go back to the 50s, as you talk about, you don't have your own company in that world. You know, so it's like you've figured out a way to bend the gender expectations and be comfortable with that. And that doesn't make you question that you're a woman and that you have the important needs of a woman and all of that. Men do not have those repetitions. They don't have those hours logged trying to sort those things out. I'm not sure if I'm actually answering your question, but it just brought me right back to that same point.
No, you are. We're going around it, and I think this is a really interesting topic for men and for women and like how they perceive themselves. So, like let's take my grandmother, because she was like, my grandmother and my grandfather were like the quintessential, like let's just say Don Draper and Betty.
Yeah, like, same. Me too.
My grandpa did not, you know, philander on my yep. grandmother. He just didn't. He wasn't that kind of guy. Right. So my grandmother raised the kids. She had help, and she also didn't have like a job, but she made her job raising the kids and working for charities and doing a lot of charitable work, raising money. So she technically did her own thing and had her own thing. It just wasn't it wasn't like she was making income and supporting the family. So. Yeah. I guess when I saw that as a kid, you know, growing up, because I went to my grandmother's house every day after school. So I was with them all the time. And, you know, she had a schedule. She had a set schedule. She had, this is what time we're having breakfast. This is what time we make lunch. And this is what time you'll have dinner on the table. And in between that, she would go and work for charities. I think she was working for the Jewish Home for the Aging. She was working for, I think she worked a little bit for SOVA. She was very involved in our temple, up at the temple, Stephen S. Wise. I think at some point she was even on the board. So she was extremely active. And right. I think that was the expectation. Like, you're going to do something. We just don't expect you to get paid for it, lady. Like, yeah. you're going to support these other things. And she had a Havara group. They were very active. Like, they had a group of like 100 people, like 50 couples, and everybody would like host every couple of months. Like, it was a very different time, but it isn't that different. It's just, I think you're onto something with where women were like, we already did these things and now we're evolving over time. Like, why can't we take these transferable skills and like make money? Yeah. We can make money. Like, we can obviously do these things. So yeah. Like, the way I see it is if I was in a position to raise a family and do that, I'd probably follow my grandmother's mold because that's what I learned growing up. And I do 90% of those things anyways. It just, I wouldn't be paid for it. Right.
Yeah.
That's just kind of true. To my realistic scenario, if that was what my husband and I had done, and he would be the breadwinner and I'd be fine with that. And like, he grew up, my husband also grew up, like I said, on a farm. His mom was a farm wife, three swears a day, including the guys that worked on the farm to farm the land. Right. Hmm. So she was like, I mean, the pioneer woman, literally, except she lived out in the boonies of Rapid City. Like, people know where Rapid City is. So that's the best way to explain it. And they had like, I want to say like, quite a few. I think they had like 9,000 acres at some point, and they were farming wheat. Yeah. I mean, this was their livelihood, right? So like, that's what they did. So, I mean, it's really no different from what my grandfather did and how Blake's mom had a full-time. Yeah. So I think that you're onto something with how women have always just had things and structure and like knew their role. And now that they're just like working and bringing in income and like everything is pretty much shared. I don't, like I said, I don't know very many women who have had the opportunity or choice to stay home and raise a family. But again, I think that's really important too. If it's possible, I would have done it, but I don't have kids, so I don't need to. I don't have to raise my cats. They're fine.
Yeah.
They know how to clean themselves.
Self-sufficient.
They're very self-sufficient little creatures.
Yeah.
But I think that when you're talking about, the concept of masculinity, the evolving nature of what that even means for men in your spaces right now, in this space, like where you're coaching and the trends that you're seeing and specifically your domain, I'm not saying it extends to everybody else's. I'm saying what you're seeing specifically with the people that gravitate towards you and
That's
your
important.
Substack and your, yeah, it's very important. Like, maybe that has like some key play into it as they're like finding like where they live in this. Well, this is what it was in the 50s, the 60s changed that, the 70s changed that, and the 90s really changed that. And they're in that generation of that transition. So what do you think about that concept?
Yeah, I think you're exactly on it. We are in a kind of messy middle for men.
Yeah.
And I've found myself, whether I like it or not, exactly in that messy middle part where I really struggle to come up with concrete places to, it's really a case by case conversation with the men that I talk to. How's this working for you? What are you doing and what's working for you? I love your example of your grandmother, by the way, and your grandfather, because this, first of all, it's just beautiful. I love painting this very historic picture, but what you probably didn't notice as much as your grandmother was dabbling what would have been more traditionally, male environments where she's running operations and she's organizing. Your grandfather probably was not picking up some of the diaper changing and right. So the very much is like to the, not to ring the bell over and over. It's like, women are venturing into these places where they weren't traditionally. Men were still very much like, nope, I do this and I do that and leave me alone. And when's the food going to be on the table? And they've just been holding strong on this position for so long. And now we're seeing like, that's just not working. I mean, first of all, the family farm is gone. That's not even really a thing.
A lot of people.
And it hasn't been for decades, right? You're making my point for me here. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, like I kind of like there's a part of me that sees what's going on in our culture right now. And I'm like, wow, I feel bad for guys. Like there's pressure on them. There's pressure that they're putting on themselves, it seems like, to try to figure things out. And like the media is not really helping. Like there's a lot of conversation about toxic masculinity and like, people do things and say things to ladies that they used to in the 50s and probably shouldn't have said those things in the first place. But again, that was a cultural snapshot of what our culture was like, and things have evolved. Human beings evolve, things change. So like there's a part of me that's like, it, like, I think that, and I'm not trying to be, either way or way about it, but I do feel like sometimes men are walking on eggshells around in their relationships. And so based on what we're talking about, let's go back to like your coaching style and the things that are gravitating towards you. When these types of topics come up, because this is a lot of, what you're kind of seeing and what we've kind of discussed, like, how do you use your coaching style to like help people come to realizations that they need to come to in your conversations with them? Like, what's your technique? What do you kind of do?
Great. So, I mean, it really comes down to identifying what's actually true for the person that I'm talking to. And that is a simple idea. But as I was saying earlier, what is actually true for us is usually a multifaceted kind of thing. I do tend to view our perspective on things to be not just a mono, like we don't exist as a singular perception of things. If you're familiar at all with Dick Schwartz's work and internal family systems, you might be familiar with the term parts work, right? Or you might have heard parts. If you haven't, you certainly understand parts. And it comes up like this. Well, part of me wants to have Italian tonight, but part of me wants to have Mexican, We speak about these conflicts inside of ourselves where it seems like there's almost like two of me inside. And the argument is made that there's far more than two of us inside. There's a kind of a family system inside of our head that often has different wants. There are different roles we take, and those roles are like entities. And so we get a little stuck, all of us, knowing what's actually true in this moment and what do we actually want. And that's a matter of negotiation with self, with all of those parts, to figure out, wait, what is the whole family of me, of Damon, really, what's really true for Damon as a family system, and what does Damon want? That's behind the work. And so while I say it like this is all we do, it's actually a long conversation just to determine what's true. It's not generally just like, this is what's true. Maybe. What else is true? What's going on? And then what is it we want to make happen from the situation? And that becomes the structure of the conversation. It's kind of identifying what's point A, and then what is the point B that we're trying to get to. It's a bit,
so
a bit esoteric,
frame,
but yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. So in that framing, do you think that the people who are gravitating you for coaching are making progress in the ways that they want to within these trends and within these questions, these intrinsic questions that they're asking of themselves? Do you think that it's helpful for them? Like, because you're talking to them all the time and you're seeing these things. And so
yeah.
What are your takes on those?
Yeah. So long as, this is a fairly recent discovery for me. So long as we're dealing with actual goings on in their lives and not hypothetical, then we're getting somewhere. We're finding something out and we're figuring out what we think about topics. The conversation has to be about something real that's happening. And I've tried it both ways. We've tried kind of getting a little bit philosophical about hypothetical situations. Those are interesting dialogues. Men seem to love to have philosophical, intellectual dialogues, but they're like spinning your wheels in the mud. We don't actually gain anything from it. So yes, so long as we're coming into contact with something that's actually happening.
Okay, that's very interesting. So, and would you say, like, within this last year, because things have been changing, I think, politically, as we spoke about earlier, like, there's a lot of polarization. I think it started a couple years ago, but, like, it feels really intense right now for a lot of people. And again, I think most people, like you said, are very much in the middle. But there's very loud voices on certain sides. And I think that's kind of echoed by social media, because that's going to get people riled up. And that's what these social media companies push. I mean, everybody knows that. And if you don't know that, I'm so sorry. You're welcome. And now you're awake. You're welcome and you're awake.
Yeah.
But like in this past year, like what have you learned and reflected on while considering like what you've learned this specific topic? So what are those trends like for you?
So I want to just flag that I feel like maybe I don't have enough history on this topic to necessarily say how it is now compared to, say, a couple of years ago. My casual sense of it is that it's not as hot of a topic as it used to be. It's not as spicy. It's not such a dangerous thing to get into. It's still uncomfortable, but there's less of this sort of like, I don't know who's around. Can I talk about this? All right, let's just talk. And there's less of that feeling about it. The men that I'm talking to are more comfortable, even if they're uncomfortable with, you know, particular language like masculinity or femininity, even if they don't want to really get into that. It's not that they crumble into a ball on the floor when it comes up. They're just like, I don't really want to talk about that. But they will talk to me about anger. We had an incredible conversation this week in my men's group about what anger is like and how people react to men's anger and what's wise to think about in those situations. And I don't know. I don't know if that was happening a couple of years ago. I don't know if men felt like they even needed to talk about that a couple of years ago.
So let's segue. So I think this was an awesome conversation. And I think that there's so much value that you have, you know, that you're seeing and that you can bring. And that, you know, if there's a man out there who's like looking for a good conversation, and I think that they would like to talk to you. So what are you up to? What are you doing? Tell us about your Substack. Tell us about you and how people can contact you and any of the things that you have going on.
Yeah. So the Substack is probably like the most front facing place to get into what I'm doing, and I wish I had. So I'm launching a second Substack, which is just such a Substacky thing to do. But the one that I've been working on for the last year or so has been pretty general. I'm now creating a Substack specifically for men, and that is not live yet. But I can get you a link for that if that's something we can
put it up below.
Okay, perfect.
See your Substack, your LinkedIn, all the things. If you have I don't think you have a podcast, but do you have a newsletter?
No, the Substack is a newsletter. The way Substack works is you can either engage with the content from the Substack site, or if you just subscribe to a Substack, you get emails whenever they send them out in the form of a newsletter. So you can just go from your inbox to Substack if you want to play around on there. Otherwise, you just get the emails like a newsletter. So it's both and. Yes, I'm on LinkedIn.
About your men's group? Your men's group. You have men's group that you meet with on a regular basis?
Yeah. I kind of have two men's groups.
Tell me.
I have Yeah, I have the Tolman group, which is digital, and I'm actually trying to build a in-person group here in Playa del Carmen, which probably won't be as important to the people watching this. Maybe you have some people in Playa del
Maybe.
Carmen that'll be checking this out. And the feeder that I've built for that group is something called Taco Bros Day. Once a month, men get together on the second
Awesome.
Wednesday. It's about tacos. It's about bros. It's really what they want to talk about. But I just want an excuse for men to get together and socialize. So many men, especially past a certain age, are isolated. And I thought this is just a simple excuse. Like everybody around here loves tacos. Let's just get together. It's bilingual group. Spanish and English are spoken. And my thought is we're just going to start a revolution locally where we're just going to get so big we just shut down taco stands wherever we go. That's like my big plan for this is
That's
just to
awesome.
shut it down. So, and that's that group is hopefully going to be a feeder system into the Tolman, which Tolman's $30 a month right now. I don't know if it's going to stay that price, but I priced it that way so that it's easy to join. It doesn't seem like a crazy investment, and then it's easy to quit. It's like, well, if I don't, I'm not giving up this huge thing. So I wanted it to be kind of easy to get in and out of. The men that joined me on Tolman, was it January this year, have generally stayed with me the whole time. So
What kind of stuff do you talk about in the Tolman group, if you don't mind?
yeah, I mean, lately it's been fun topics like shame and anger, but it is in the context of a story. So I do ask the guys to bring in an actual story that happened to them. And what's amazing, this I did not plan, Stacey. I thought it was going to be me doing one-on-one coaching with one person in front of an audience. And what happened that first meeting was one of the guys shared something very personal. Another guy, before I got to respond, said, Can I say something here? And I was like, yeah, you can. And suddenly we had this co-created dialogue that I was mostly just trying to like kind of direct and make sure everybody got a chance to talk. Suddenly it didn't have to be the Damon show. It was so amazing and it stayed like that. I'm doing very little actual quote unquote coaching in here. This group is working with each other by some force that I never put in motion. So I love it. I'm so honored to be a part of this group. It's hard to articulate how I feel about it, but I really love it.
That's awesome. That is
Yeah, I
so
agree.
freaking cool. Yeah,
I
I
wish
love
I could
that.
take credit for it. All I did is charge them and say, let's get together and talk.
But you also opened up a forum of like just people being able to be themselves and feel free to have a conversation, which is
For
a
sure.
very safe space. And I think
Yeah,
that
for
you
sure.
should take credit for that because no one else
Yeah.
did it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely that. I mean, we start with something called presence anchoring, which is just a simple, just a quick, like low woo, just getting into the headspace of this present moment. And I thought the guys are going to be like, oh, this is really woo woo and weird. And I've asked them since then, they're like, actually, no, this really resets me from my crazy day to just like shut all that out for a second, come back into the space and be focused on what we're doing. Every one of them articulated that. I'm like, all right, we're going to keep doing it. So I do bring something to the group. I don't want to take credit for the
I think
awesomeness
you're being
that they bring.
humble. You're being humble, and that's okay. I'm letting people hear you like might have imposter syndrome going on for you, and that's okay too.
No, they
Yeah,
just
maybe a
this
little.
just it's just these guys aren't making me do everything, you know? They're really involved in a way that I never asked of them. They just did it. They just took it up and I'm so happy about it. So
Yeah, they're showing up in a good way for you, it sounds like.
100%.
Love
Yeah.
that. Love
For
that.
each other. Yeah.
So, Damon, thank you so much for joining us today on this
Thank you.
podcast with the data points that you've shared with us. I do think that you're seeing some really interesting trends in your industry, and it was such a great conversation. I'm so glad you were willing to join. And everything that you need to know about Damon will be listed below. You'll see links to his LinkedIn, information to his Substack, and potential information to the books that he mentioned and the authors too, if we can get them. So have a great day. Thanks for joining. I'm so excited that you are here.